Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hi, John Schwab here, and welcome to episode 174 of the Curtain Call podcast. Curtain Call is the podcast that takes you deep behind the scenes of the theater world, bringing you in-depth conversations with the story makers that are shaping the future of theater. We pull back the curtain to reveal the stories behind the stories and give you a glimpse into the backstage world like no other podcast does. First of all, a very happy new year to all the listeners of this podcast. Your support over the last coming up to 8 years now has been incredible. I so appreciate it, as does everybody at the Broadway Podcast Network as well. Secondly, thank you to all who listened to the Christmas episode this year. It was a gorgeous compilation of readings by some of my best friends, and so many people downloaded it and listened and shared. It was awesome. I thank you all. And thirdly, we will be having many, many more episodes this year as theater in and around London is back to its pre-pandemic fervor, and I have more time to devote to watching more theater and chatting to people that make that theater happen. So stand by for some really, really great content this year. And to kick off 2024 in what seems like a year of non-stop elections, I thought I would do a kind of an episode that was apposite to such. The US presidential elections are going on, the general election here in the UK, as well as a Russian election, if you can actually call it that. Less of that, the better. Anyway, I watched 1979 at the Finborough Theatre. It is a scathing satire of the Canadian political landscape back in 1979, and carrying on, literally, you learn about what goes on afterwards in the 80s and 90s, in modern day. It's a snapshot of the six-month reign of the infuriatingly righteous Prime Minister Joe Clark, nicknamed Joe who, in an effort to not anger anyone, actually ends up angering everyone, and almost kind of in the audience as well. Well, except maybe his wife, Maureen. Anyway, I sat down with the cast and the producer of 1979 on stage at the Finborough. And it was a cold Saturday here in London, so the heater was pumping out some air during some of that chat. And I've used a bit of modern technology to get rid as much of the sound as possible, but that's kind of what you get on this podcast. You know, we put you into the theater. We were sitting in the theater. Anyway, without further ado, here's the team of 1979.
This is not really you. I don't interview anyone. You know, because you've been on. Sam and I go way back. Just preamble. I know just previous. Mm-hmm. I know every one of you. Other than Sarah, nice to meet you. I have auditioned for you, which I loved. When I saw the cast come out on this, I was like, fuck yeah, that's the cast. It was absolutely correct. It was the right cast, and I was so happy to see your face on there. Aww. Your face on there. Your face on there. Very, very happy.
Thank you.
Yeah, because if I didn't see those faces and I came and I watched it, Sarah, it was great. I would have issues. Anyway, so
we wouldn't be here.
So we'll do a chat, not an interview. But first of all, the boring bits. Can I go around the room from you, Sarah, around to, and please state your name and what you do on the show? Night's called 1979, by the way, but yes.
Great. I'm Sarah Laurie, producer of 1979 for Proud Haddock, in association with Neil McPherson from the Finborough Theatre.
Oh, you are so great.
That was really good.
My name is Joseph May. I played Joe Clark in 1979. He was the Prime Minister.
Right.
I'm Ian Porter, and I'm Actor A.
That's so much more than that.
That's what it is.
So much more than that.
I'm sure I didn't see Actor A. I thought, Actor A.
I play a few other parts, but I'm Actor A. Okay.
But you have the wonderful role of Trudeau.
Pierre Trudeau and Don Crosby and Flora McDonald and
Jenny
Byrne.
Yeah.
Who doesn't get a name check. She doesn't get a little placard at the end, which I've always wondered about.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Sorry, moving on.
And who are all real people, which is crazy. And I'm Samantha Coughlin, and I play five people. I think I'm Actor B, which is just offensive. No, but I play, strangely, I play Stephen Harper, former Prime Minister of Canada. Play Brian Mulroney, former Prime Minister of Canada. You wouldn't expect it. I play Flora McDonald as well. As Ian, we do a crossover, and I play
Maureen
McTeer,
yes.
Joe's wife, and who else do I play?
You play Lawrence, Alan Lawrence.
Alan Lawrence, and that's it.
That's it.
Great.
Amazing. It's really easy, by the way. It's not confusing. Like, the characters are really well-defined, so when you come in, you're not kind of thinking, oh, who is this? And it happens very quickly.
Yeah.
But my first question has to be Sarah, and Jimmy's not here, which is why the director, so you will get to speak on his behalf. But why 1979 as a Canadian play about politics and policy as we come together? I mean, having watched it, it's not a strange choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but having, like, on the face of it, you know, it may appear to be, which I urge anyone to come watch, but how and why 1979?
Michael Healy has a relationship with FINRA, so this is the fourth of his plays to have their European premiere here.
Okay.
So there's a sort of track record there. There's a relationship. Jimmy first read the play in 2019, so pre-COVID, and it spoke to him then, and he was going to direct it then here. But he's he thinks it's serendipitous that actually it's happening now. It feels more resonant and relevant now with, you know, what's unfolding internationally and with so many general elections coming up this year. I think there has been a sort of marketing-wise, it's been a challenge because in Canada it's billed as a hilarious political comedy, and satire really relies upon the audience knowing who is being satirized.
Yeah, sure.
So that's been the challenge, and I think British audiences, it's very powerful. You as well, when we have a mainly Canadian crowd versus a British crowd, because British audiences need to learn before they can laugh, whereas a Canadian audience have that ready access to the satire. So I think here, whether or not it's received as hilarious by British people or more educational, it's a sort of gentler offering, I think. It would be like me watching Canadian Spitting Image.
Yes.
I'd be like, well, this sort of seems funny, but I'm not sure.
It's kind of sketch comedy, universal,
yeah.
but not
yeah.
the specificity is missing to make it
yes.
hilarious.
But I think the real gift, if you can call Liz Truss a gift,
she was a gift.
She was a
maybe
gift.
Not one that you want to get.
Not one of the Christmas.
Like,
yeah.
gift.
We've been sort of, you know, riffing on this idea that, like, history not only repeats itself, but it actually surpasses itself. So in the case of Liz Truss, you know, Joe Clark's tenure being 6 months, Liz Truss's tenure being 6 weeks.
Mm.
You know, British audiences are sort of responding to this as a kind of satirization of the Liz Truss story as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, it was predates her because it was written in 2017.
Mm.
But I think the headline in answer, very long answer to your quite short question, is that we're glad it's happening now and not 2019. I think it feels even more.
Yeah. Also about, like, the political machinations, which people have a real understanding of after all the Brexit gamesmanship that happened, and, you know, like, pulling back the votes, dodging stuff like that, which all happens within this, you know, the whole, that's a lot of the plot, is to get Joe to, you know, use the machinations of Parliament, which he refuses to do. But, I mean, that's, so there's a familiarity, I think, with the British audience with that now.
I think, as well, it's very prescient. So we talked about this last night, we went for a drink at the pub. And saying it's spot on, like, you can just—it's like it's been helicoptered into, you know, the situation today. And yeah, with all, but I think it also with the 24-hour news cycle, we're constantly being fed BBC updates and CNN updates and all. right wing left Fox, you know, Great British News, Great Britain's, you know, people will get the updates constantly. And so these little things, it's funny you mentioned projections. There's some projections that go on, and you say, just that it can divide the audience. Mm. Like some people like it, some people hate it. I thought I didn't mind it at all. I thought they were quite funny. It's like having little notifications on my phone.
Yeah.
Mm. That's what it felt like.
Oh, that's yeah.
So my mind's already kind of attuned to that. So we got the producers' why. That's great. I mean, I think that's a stupid thing. Everything, I agree with that reasoning for sure. Full disclosure, I auditioned for this as well, and I thought it was hilarious. You know, it was funny. And I didn't know where that scene came on, my audition scene. I didn't know where it came in. It opens the show. And so when you start, I was like, oh my God, that's the opening scene? And I was like, oh, strapped in, buckle up. here we go.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to. It's straight in. Mm-hmm. So when you guys read the script and got the script, two of you are Canadian, Sam and Joe, you're Canadian, and Ian, you're Southern California.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like Canada of America. So, you know, when you first got the script, what were your first, you know, and if you knew about this, the people, I'm sure you did, or at least a little bit, you're not that old. You know, it's because it's set in the 80s. In 79. Set in the 79. But I was thinking about when you guys are kids. You guys
yeah,
are
yeah.
kids in the 80s.
Yes.
So would you have known about this? And were those names popped in your head when you first read it? What were your first
names? Joe.
I knew the names because, yeah, my mom, these guys have heard all this, but my mom knew Joe Clark.
Okay.
And she worked with his brother.
It's the most
and
Canadian
I know,
thing
yeah.
ever.
And I played hockey with his nephew.
Okay.
So, which is, so I knew.
He's definitely Canadian.
Yeah. yeah, so I knew Joe. I met Joe as a kid very young. I don't remember it particularly. But I'm told I met him. And yeah, so I did know about it because he was also like our local MP. So like his history and story was there for me. It wasn't, I don't think, a resonant story within Canada. He was kind of forgotten about. But for me, it was a local story. So I knew it, yeah. And also, when I read the script, I just loved the writing. I thought the writing was really sharp and funny and on point, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of Joe Clark, which is embarrassing, but I never have. But his nickname was Joe Who, because no one knew who he was.
If he said Joe Who, you'd be like, oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. My parents would have been. They're like, yeah, Joe Who. But because Joe May is from Alberta, so I guess that would be more of like a local story, whereas I'm from Vancouver, so I hadn't heard of him. But the rest of them, I had.
Yeah.
Mulrooney, I think he was prime minister when I was a kid.
He was the one he had most... yeah, probably the same thing. First Prime Minister, you kind of really remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was quite a character. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike Joe, who was sort of
yeah.
faceless.
Yeah, like. Exactly. But Pierre Trudeau, I mean, was still, who Ian plays beautifully, was a very huge figure in Canada and still is to this day. Even though his son Justin is Prime Minister, Pierre's figure looms large, I think, for everybody who knew of him and that kind of.
Yeah. And Ian, just nothing.
other than knowing Pierre Trudeau was,
yeah, of course, which we do, yeah.
And knowing that he was a character, or he was, I couldn't have told you any specifics about what he did in policy or what, you know, things he did, or why he was known in the States, other than he was a leader for a long time.
Yeah.
And it was really fun because of him and Crosby are such big characters anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, in real life, they're big characters, and then they're obviously presented as bigger characters
yeah.
in the play. But looking up good old YouTube
yeah.
videos
yeah.
of Crosby,
yeah.
just him and his big mouth. And,
yeah, it is phenomenal. I mean, looking at some of the footage from YouTube, and you think these guys were—that's real. That's a policy. You think we, you know, for Americans, like, well, Trump was our first big kind of buffoon, like loudmouth and say what you want, and who cares. Holy crap, it's been going on in Canada for decades.
Yeah. The High Commissioner's office came and they were like, oh yeah, like we know these people. You guys were like that. Those are that.
Because they knew everybody. He said he met everybody.
They met everybody. It's crazy.
So were you able to take, let's say, our politicians the last half a decade? I recognize so much of the politics and great thing about this play is the difference between policy and politics. I loved that scene with Steve Harper. Is that
Steve Harper?
Steve Harper. And talking about policy and politics, and it was great. I was you do kind of what I did was taking today's politicians and, you know, with Trump and DeSantis and, you know, and the plays, the political plays, we are now completely two-party system here. There will never be anything more than a two-party system. It's so divided and political play where does anything get done? And also the question is, you know, with a guy who is has all his morals intact, he didn't check his integrity at the door when he went to politics. He was like, I'm going to do the next right thing. And nothing works out. This could be the most depressing play if you really, you know, were you able to take in your knowledge of today's politicians?
Oh, yeah, very much. That was a constant theme for Jimmy, I think, as well, wasn't it? Bringing up the kind of relevance of today.
Yeah.
And especially kind of the Boris Johnson kind of thing. And also that idea of, you know, parking your morals at the door and everything, just getting things done so you could do it for your own team. And that's what's happened now. Mm. There is a total divide and nothing is collaborative anymore and nothing is cooperative. And so there is a greater and greater divide, and that's the argument that Harper makes, and that's how you have power. So it's more about, so the question now, which has become, after, you know, what, 13, 14 years of Tory power, it's, you know, it does feel like there's a hegemony, we are stuck within this system, and then you occasionally break it and then you get back into it, and nobody ever is working towards a singular goal.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating. And did we say, like, Joe Clark was the Canada's youngest prime minister?
No, I'm sorry,
39.
38.
Oh, 39?
39.
You would know.
Obviously,
your mom's friend. No. which is, I guess, like, what I have, which has been a passion of mine over the past recent times, of the reality of the sort of darker side of Canada, and that sort of coming to more of a international knowledge, and especially here in the UK, of like the reality that it's not just some like strange mecca of just like happy go lucky people, but that there is like there are some dark through lines, and there are very much, especially right now, you can feel the far right touching the corners of things. And I think Michael Healy has a particular fascination with Stephen Harper, who was prime minister when I was in the UK, so I didn't actually have much experience with him. I didn't realize how far right he was. I thought he was just a conservative politician. But, and he hated him so much that that's part of the reason why he wrote such an intricate scene at the end of this play to explore more of those ideologies, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a complete concoction as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that. It's really witty that there was no way that he would have met at that time because he didn't actually join
until
the 80s.
Yeah.
It's a pure concoction.
I love it. He did. The thing is like full disclosure. This never happened. But listen, you know.
Yeah. But also, like, how does someone get to that position? Yes. He takes 2 years. He does become prime minister.
Yeah.
So how does someone get to that point when he was only prime minister so short, more Joe Clark so shortly?
These kind of the view behind the door. I think we're all kind of used to it because in the UK you've got Yes Prime Minister, and in the States you've got West Wing, and that kind of. So people have seen pseudo fictionalized versions of it, but I think with the, like you were talking about the news cycle, things are just coming out now that people are seeing the real view behind the door, and it's exactly what's being portrayed.
Yeah.
The policy, politicking. Well, I'll do it if you give me something. I'll vote for that.
Yeah, the trade-offs.
Which is just what it's about now.
And even the good guys, well, that's what Stephen Harper says, whether you agree with him or you don't, but even the good guys, I say, you, if you're in power, you call everything policy.
Yeah.
But actually there's some, you're grasping for power, but it's hidden away, it's a secret. And now you're in a dishonest relationship with the people you serve. He's calling him out, in a sense.
Or even with yourself, as Stephen Harper says.
Yeah. You're pretending that you're all good and you're not.
Yeah.
But Joe's good.
Amazing. Amazing.
Now we pause for a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the Curtain Call Podcast.
Let's talk about how much you get to go in as performance. Like, you know, I love, as a performer, I love going to watch plays where we talked about last night, you know, swinging for the fence every now and then. And I love being able to just go big, like, you know, kick the door down, kind of come in and go, yeah, and then leave with that character, leave the audience going, what the fuck just happened? You know, I love that because there are people like that around, you know, and going back and looking at YouTube videos of Crosby, you see he was a larger than life character, but how much fun is it to kind of embrace them? And both, because Sam and Ian, you both gender swap as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sam more than me. The playwright was also, he was very generous because he says, at the very beginning, he says, these are not impersonations.
Yeah.
And there was a podcast that he did where he sort of explained the fact that we get introductory name flash on the projections. He said, that's enough. If you just say, that's Flora McDonald, and then a actor walks on that's wearing earrings, you go, oh, that's Flora McDonald. Mm-hmm. So you're given much more freedom to kind of do whatever you sort of feel like doing. And I mean, the beginning of the Trudeau scene, he dances with a chainsaw, and I actually, it says in the script, he starts dancing with the front row or mm-hmm. with the audience members, which is ridiculous. And you say, talk about, you want to dial that up, and found that actually I couldn't dial it up very much because I was out of breath to then start talking because you've got so much to say.
You were doing some slow, sexy, sultry movement.
Sexy. Yeah. There's a lot of that, but it's like,
that's planned.
Yeah. We did that one crazy speed run
right.
where we just turned everything up to 11.
Yeah.
And I couldn't breathe. But that's my experience. What about you?
Yeah, my first character is a man, and I don't particularly, aside from wearing a suit, I don't really play it that much like a man.
Yeah.
So I think we just sort of took a sort of neutral approach to it all, and didn't make it too much. And each scene, I think we discovered, like, each scene is a vignette into itself, so everything is doing something separate. So my first two characters are kind of like setup characters of just giving information or setting up the world. And then Mulrooney is just like this, then there's Joe's wife, who's like, that's a real character, yeah. And very much a scene, and there's a lot of love between them, and it's I guess more naturalistic.
Yeah.
And then Mulrooney is just this like ridiculous borderline caricature. That is
mafia. He almost feels it, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as the Canadian High Commissioner deputy said, he said, he's like, oh, he must hate Mulrooney. Because there was like, this is like a sleazy Trumpian, but there's kind of no way other way to play it other than it being a heightened character. And then the last one.
Yeah, if you played that straight, it wouldn't work.
Would it work at all? And then Stephen Harper, which I think is really interesting that he had a woman play to add the sort of softness or like, and maybe, I don't know.
There was no physical threat, even when you kind of face him.
Yeah.
When you go up to him, there's no, oh, you get hit over the head with a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That works. I mean, because the two of you play multiple characters, is something you've done before, or is it, you know?
I've done it, understudy stuff,
right.
where you understudy two or three different parts, and you have to compartmentalize it and figure out a way of doing it. This is, I actually found it's fairly easy. Once you really invest in one sort of vibe, and the two men that I play have such vastly different sort of energies about them. One of them is all scattered and crazed, and the other one is slick and smooth. And it's just sort of to sort of ground, because also doing fast changes in between this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the Trudeau change. I literally, like, I get my tie and I kind of take a last breath, and then you're on the phone saying, oh, is he here? So it's like, it's doable. It's doable, but it's right there.
You could really dump him in the shit.
I could speed that up a lot.
And it's just like, to try and kind of like, okay, now he's this, I think octopus, and I think, you know, that kind of thing. But you have to kind of really kind of consciously kind of change gears for it. And I love your entrance as Mulrooney.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm on as Flora, and I turn around, and you're just there, just being all slimy.
And I give her a slap on the bum. Like, yeah. So that gender swapping, I think, is quite interesting. I found this super hard, not gonna lie to you. I'm not used to this style at all, speaking this quickly. And also after a pandemic, like my brain was just complete mush. And I've been in Vancouver auditioning for Hallmark, so it's not a lot of like sharp thinking there. So I found it super hard to wake up and like get on board and also differentiate. I've never played this many characters before, not especially men. I play three men.
Yeah.
And also known people,
yeah,
which is hard. Even the Canadians know who these people are. So I found it super hard, but this week I feel like I've like found my groove, and I feel like I can understand the play, the progression of the play, and exactly. And also the Stephen Harper, for people listening probably don't know, the Stephen Harper scene is almost as a play unto itself.
Yeah.
The rhythm is totally different.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a two-hander, as Jimmy said, at the Royal Court. It's like a two-hander of two people having a discussion.
Yeah.
A heavy political
discussion. Well, a heavy political discussion.
Yeah. It's a real, it almost feels like a coda to kind of go, right, all that crap that's just gone on, this
is what it's about.
This is what it's about. So it's great. But Sam, you smack, like, you're my friend. I would tell you if I didn't believe you. I wouldn't tell you, Joe. Because you go home and cry. You're so mean. I know. We've gone on for about 20 minutes. I'll just kind of keep it short enough. I'd love the four of you to answer this question as well. And you know, Phoebe's up there in the box. She can shout out something too. What would you like people to come to get out of the show when they come to see it? So, you know, what I got out of the show really was I felt like an honest portrayal of the behind the scenes, almost Machiavellian machinations of politics and policy. I never really thought about getting voted into power, and your second day in power, you go, how do I keep it?
Yeah.
And what do I have to do? So what would you like people to come away with? And you can have the same answer, it doesn't matter, but be interesting to hear.
Well, I agree with you about that penny dropping. I mean, I did a degree in political science, and when I read the play, I was like, oh, that thing about policy and politics, it's so deceptively simple.
Mm.
So I'd like people to come away with that kind of penny dropping and sort of seeing this play as universal themes can speak to anyone. I would also say, speaking on Jimmy's behalf, he really likes this idea of it being a Greek tragedy. And I think it was Alan Bennett, he's quoted this before, but that comedy is a tragedy performed by clowns.
Yeah.
So it really has depth. Yes, there are belly laughs, but it really does have depth. And it feels like a play in three acts. You've got the setup, then you've got the problem, the conflict, and then you've got that kind of coda.
Mm.
And, you know, Joe Clark's demise and downfall, that's not a spoiler. You know it from the start.
Sure.
He's fighting a losing battle. So I think, I would like people to come away feeling educated and entertained.
And a lot of people have mentioned about, we know that Joe Clark lost. We know that he didn't, but so many people have gone, you really want him to win.
Yeah.
You really do want him to go, come on, give him a break.
Do something,
do something. I want people to come out, I've kind of realized, I think by doing it, to kind of question what they want in a politician, I think, you know, and to kind of look at where we are and this kind of divide that's happened, like in the States, or Canada, or here, this kind of really massive divide, and kind of we've lost that cooperation, which used to be when we were growing up, was there still. It was. People did cooperate, and they would kind of amend bills to kind of work with each other to kind of make
sort of the greater good for the country. Across the aisle.
The aisle kind of stuff, and that's been lost, and it's kind of, and though Joe fails, he's attempting it, and so it's kind of nice to kind of think of people maybe walking away going, oh, we could do it differently, not the way that fucking Stephen Harper, excuse the language, does it.
It's all right.
So it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be just about power. It can be what we actually vote them in for, which is the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. I think just to, it's great. It's great theater. It's small box theater, and you got three strong actors doing a very strong piece, and you're sitting 6 feet from them.
Yeah.
And that sort of intimacy of theater, I always find is like it feels like a little magic find if you're watching actors that have done 4 or 5 weeks of work on something and you get to see it. And this has this sort of feel. The theater itself is exactly what The Office looked like, and it feels like you're just sitting in an office and watching people just rock and roll.
Yeah.
I think it's just a good night out.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, because the Finbro is so small in a wonderful way, we basically, the audience and us are one.
Yeah.
We're all working together.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I want people to, I guess, maybe learn a little bit more about Canada and all the different sides of Canada, and that not everything is completely idealistic.
Yeah.
And also, I play Stephen Harper, so I stand up for the human beings that I'm playing. But I think that what I find so interesting about the final message of the play is like actually how someone becomes something.
Yeah.
That's really interesting to me and important.
Those are all phenomenal reasons to come. And who would have thought that Canucks could be so conniving with each other? You guys are so terrible.
Oh, sorry about that.
Human beings. But Johnny, we didn't say at the beginning how we met, that we worked on my very first play.
What?
That was
your very first play?
In London.
Oh my lord. We were both understudies at the Old Vic for National Anthems.
Yeah.
You were understudying Mary Stuart Masterson, who is now my son's godmother.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I understudied Kevin Spacey and Stephen Weber.
Yes.
We'll chat about that another time.
Stories from the bar.
And this is the last question. So would you mind letting people know where you can get tickets, how long it's on, and all that lovely producer stuff?
Great. Well, we run till the 27th.
Okay.
So, the 27th of January, Tuesday to Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's at 7:30 every evening, and on Saturdays and Sundays we have a 3 o'clock show.
Perfect.
No performance in the evening on a Sunday. And via the Finbra.
Okay.
Online, over the phone, via the Finbra box office.
Perfect. I'll put everything in the show notes. But everyone, thank you so much.
Thank you, John
Schwab.
Congratulations.
Schwab. It was fun. It was a fun evening, and I'm glad I came to see it. And well done, Sarah, putting and passing to Jimmy my best.
It's only 80 minutes, which is really important.
80 minutes,
80
minutes.
75.
Well, 75.
75.
It's true. We really cranked
like,
it up.
On a cold day, and if Joe wants to throw Ian in the shit, it's going to be 73 minutes.
We're throwing fun.
Phoebe, just shout out and say hi. All right, that's our stage manager, rock and roll stage manager.
She's amazing. So come to the Denver Theater. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Producer Sarah Laurie, cast members Joseph May, Samantha Coughlin, and Ian Porter, with a quick hello from stage manager Phoebe at the end, all from 1979, currently playing at the Finborough Theatre in West London, and is on for another 2 weeks as this episode drops. You can follow all their socials at 1979 Play on Insta and the platform formerly known as Twitter. I will put all these links in the show notes and also for the tickets. But you can head to finboroughtheatre.co.uk. If you find yourself there, you'll find yourself in the right place to get a ticket. And you should get a ticket. Go and see it. It's funny and prescient and scary. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me on all the socials at John Schwab, JohnSchwab. Thank you for listening. Speak soon and stay safe. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.